2372. That cancer treatment success depends on early diagnosis. Lung cancer, unfortunately for many, is discovered too late. Various imaging technologies have been used to try to detect early lung cancer, with some success, and new methods for detection are under development. In a recent study, U.S. scientists have developed a genetic test, the results of which are published in the March 4, 2007 edition, online in the journal Nature Medicine, which predicts early stages of lung cancer by looking for genetic changes in the cells of a smoker's airway. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Avram Spira, Assistant Professor of Medicine, Pathology and Laboratory Medicine, Adjunct Assistant Professor of Bioinformatics and Director, Bioinformatics and Systems Biology Program, the Pulmonary Center at Boston University Medical Center. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And I wanted to ask you first off, just to give the public an impression of how many people are diagnosed with lung cancer each year.
Well, in the United States, there are approximately 170,000 individuals who are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. And essentially, the five-year survival for that group is less than 20%. That is, less than one in five of those individuals who were diagnosed in the year 2007 will be alive in the year 2012. So we really have an enormous epidemic on our hand, and similar numbers are seen in both Canada and Europe.
So in other words, the stage at which the cancers are being detected when these diagnoses are made are invariably later on in the cancer's natural history.
Yeah, lung cancer is most often diagnosed at a stage at which it can no longer be resected for cure by a surgeon. Less than 20% of all new lung cancer diagnoses, again, in the United States in the year 2007, will be made at stage one, which is the stage where the disease has not spread to regional lymph nodes or distant metastatic sites. And as a result, the five-year survival for the disease is very poor. And this is in sharp contrast to many of the other cancers that we see and treat, including colon and breast and prostate, where we are able, generally speaking, to detect the disease at an earlier stage and thus have better five-year survivals.
Now, can you talk a bit about the pathophysiology or the sort of the mechanism involved with regards to lung cancer in smokers and also with reference to the genetic research that is involved, with especially with regards to your study?
Yeah, so the underlying pathophysiology or mechanism for our study relates to a concept that we term the airway field of injury hypothesis, if you wish. And what that basically means is that individuals who smoke, they have changes that occur at a genetic level, not just in their lung tissue, but in the entire respiratory tract. In the cells, we call them epithelial cells, that line that tract and are exposed to the toxins in cigarette smoke. So while lung cancer develops deep in their lungs, in a subset of individuals who smoke, there is actually genetic changes that occur throughout the lung and throughout the respiratory tract. So that we think of the lung cancer as arising within a field of injury in the airway and lung tissue. As a result of that concept, we believe, and now have shown, that we can use airway epithelial cells that can be obtained in a relatively non-invasive fashion to tell us something about what's going on more deeply in the lung, and thus avoid more invasive procedures like lung biopsies for detecting the lung cancer. And that's essentially what we have shown in this first pilot study, that the cells that we can obtain in the large airways at the time of bronchoscopy can serve as a surrogate for what's going on more deeply in the lung and thus act really as an early diagnostic test for the disease.
Now, in a little more detail with regards to your study design, who was included or excluded within the study, and how was it conducted over what time frame?
So the study was initiated in January of 2003, and it ran through December of 2006, and we collected approximately 200 subjects from four medical centers, three in the United States and one in Ireland. And the people that were included in the study were smokers, either current smokers or former smokers, who had an abnormality on an X-ray or CAT scan of their chest, or they had symptoms, pulmonary symptoms, that were concerning for the possibility that they might have lung cancer. And this is a problem that we are increasingly seeing in our pulmonary practices, both in the United States, Canada, and Europe, that people with a prior history of tobacco exposure or current history of exposure who are found to have abnormalities on imaging studies of the chest that are becoming more frequently done. These people are referred often to the pulmonologist for further evaluation to rule out lung cancer. So we very often these people undergo fiber optic bronchoscopy as their initial diagnostic test to rule out the disease. So we recruited 200 of these subjects who had a concern, a clinical suspicion for disease, and were undergoing bronchoscopy to be recruited into our study. And what we did is we allowed the clinicians to do the routine bronchoscopic brushings, washings, and biopsies of the affected regions. But before the scope was pulled out of the airway, we asked the clinicians to collect for us a small number of epithelial cells that line the large airways, simply by brushing. So this is not a biopsy test, but it's a little scraping, like a pap smear, scraping the cells from the airway, giving us those cells, and allowing us to look at the genetic activity in those cells. All the patients were then followed until a final diagnosis was made of either lung cancer or an alternative benign disease of the chest. And about half of the subjects in our study ended up having lung cancer, and half had an alternative diagnosis made. We then went back and looked at our gene expression profile and showed or demonstrated that we could predict with a very high accuracy who had lung cancer and who didn't at that initial bronchoscopy.
Now, is this based on looking at the genetic changes and comparing it to a standard so that knowing which genes would be potentially involved with the cancer development, almost like a fingerprint a biomarker that would tell you this person is most likely to have lung cancer?
Exactly. That's exactly right. We've previously published and done a study where we looked at healthy, never-smoking individuals at the profile of gene expression in these airway epithelial cells, and we've looked at a large cohort of healthy smokers who do not have lung cancer and really showed what are the typical changes that occur in individuals who smoke who don't have lung cancer. And we believe a lot of those changes are actually protective, sets of genes that are turned on to protect yourself from the toxin that you're being exposed to. We found in this study that the subset of smokers who had lung cancer had an abnormal response at a gene activity level in these cells. They weren't turning on the genes that are normally turned on when an individual is exposed to the toxins in cigarette smoke. So in a sense, we developed this biomarker based on a response that we characterize as being abnormal in terms of what you should be doing in the setting of tobacco exposure.
So in other words, if this is taken now to a next step where you have someone with a smoking history, but not necessarily having symptoms as done in this study, but rather as a means of looking to see if there has been any early damage or suggestion that cancer may be occurring at early stages, that this is where it's intended to head.
Absolutely. That's the direction we'd like to go move towards. So this study that was published in Nature Medicine was in the diagnostic setting. So as you pointed out, individuals who had already had symptoms or an X-ray abnormality and were undergoing the bronchoscopy for suspicion of lung cancer. We believe the changes that we're seeing at the genetic level would precede the development of the disease and therefore have the potential to be applied in a screening tool or in a screening setting where you can look at healthy individuals and see if they're responding in the appropriate fashion to the toxin. The study that I am discussing did not include a group of individuals who were followed longitudinally over many years to assess the ability of this test to act as a screening tool, but those are the studies that we're beginning to embark on right now, and we have very high hopes for.
And how, at this point, how sensitive and specific is this evaluation or test being done, looking at the epithelial cells, especially in reference to a potential for using it as a screening tool?
Yeah, so the sensitivity in the study that we published in Nature Medicine was in the low 80% range. However, when you combined the test with the results of bronchoscopy, that is, the cells that are obtained through the routine washing, brushings, and biopsies, as well as our gene expression profile, because we weren't trying to replace the bronchoscopy tests, we were simply trying to add value to them. bronchoscopy alone, I should mention, has a sensitivity of only 30 to 60% mm-hmm. for lung cancer. When we combine that with our gene expression test, this combined sensitivity was about 95%. So we missed very few cancers in the diagnostic setting. If we move this test to a screening setting, and we remove the need to do bronchoscopy and use epithelial cells that we can obtain from the mouth or nose, then we hope to achieve a much higher sensitivity for the gene expression alone, because 80% sensitivity would probably not be sufficient as a screening tool for the disease.
Right.
So I don't necessarily see this as a standalone test. This test may be done together, so that is a mouth or nose scraping along with a CT scan or X-ray may be used together as an effective way of screening for disease. And that's something that, again, we need further studies to look at.
Now, what strikes me as well is that this seems to be a particular technology that could apply to other types of cancers and tissue diagnoses, given that you're looking at gene expression from either traumas or exposure to toxins or just genetic variation that occurs within the cancer cells themselves. So I would imagine that this is quite an exciting step because it does tend to look like it can branch off into other areas.
Absolutely. The idea that one does not need to sample the area that actually has the disease, but rather can sample cells that are relatively easily obtained in a non-invasive fashion from an area that's distant from the disease but reflects what's going on in the body, could be applied to numerous other cancers and other diseases in general. So, for example, we are now looking at colon cancer, where one would not necessarily need a colonoscopy to go all the way up into the colon and look for the actual abnormality, but rather look at cells from the rectum in a less invasive fashion as acting as a surrogate to tell us what's going on more deep in the colon, and therefore act as a less invasive biomarker for disease. And we are very excited by the potential to really use this novel paradigm to a number of other diseases, including colon cancer.
Well, Dr. Spear, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this new test or at least evaluation that's being done. And it is actually quite exciting when you think about, and I can tell from the way you've been talking, it's a whole new avenue to try and make a diagnosis and perhaps even make a dent into those 80% of the population that is diagnosed with lung cancer of having such poor 5-year survival rates.
Absolutely. And we're very, very excited by these initial results. And we're hoping, again, to take this test and develop it further into a screening tool that can be used, again, in a healthy population of current and former smokers to identify those individuals at highest risk years before they develop the disease so that we can prevent the disease from actually occurring as opposed to having to deal with it once it's already there.
Well, I'd love to have you back on again with the next series of study research papers that come out and go through and follow how this progresses.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All the best.
Okay, take
progresses.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All the best.
Okay, take care.
Dr. Avram Spira is assistant professor.